Blog Talk Radio.
Out here in the perimeter, there are no stars. Out here, we is stone, the immaculate.
Now listen to this.
I think this about sums it up. Chat room, as I do the same, because I'm going to let the president talk for a while and see if we find anything useful. Because tonight, we're going to be dealing with the profile of the Onto. Now, we did cover the Exo a couple weeks ago and talked about that and what that profile is. And if any of this language seems a little weird, a little, you know, what the hell is he talking about, don't bother me. Go to the site. SomaSpace.org, scroll down to meet the four domains, and it'll all be simplified for you, all right? I can't do that here on the show every week, all right? I'm almost sick of talking to myself, as it is. Number to call if you have anything to say at all about anything. I would love some company. I have three guests in the wings tonight that none of them have confirmed because they're all onto. So we don't know if they'll honor us with their presence or not. When they get here, I'm going to beat their little brains in for putting me through this. Until then, we'll be riffing on the president, and we're going to cover a little bit about the Onto profile by taking a little closer look at the behavioral patterns of one Peyton Manning. So there you go. This is an action-packed show. It looks like they're ready for the kickoff here at the State of the Union, and as soon as they get ready with the preliminaries, we'll switch over to it. I got a feeling this is going to be one of those speeches that Obama is... I don't know if we're going to get a "you lie" out of it, but we're going to get some stuff because and then this is why it's perfect theater for this tonight to talk about the Onto profile because it is all about the difference between first-person authority, which is what an Onto really has naturally, and third-person authority, which you get from the culture. And how does that make you shift the way you communicate? Now, here's Obama, as we covered. He's an exo-sapien. He's got a 9% shared brain with the rest of us, and the other 81 or 91% of the time, he's off on his own little tangent, and that's what makes him so different and also so susceptible to attack because he doesn't interact with us that much. So when he sees the opposition and all things coming at him, I think it takes him a little while to kind of figure out that they're not nice, that they're not going to, share and be all bipartisan-y-like. No, they're trying to obliterate the man. So we'll see how this plays out. This is going to be an interesting speech because, the first State of the Union address is usually the one that sets the tone for the whole first term. So here he comes. Let's see. They're going to announce it in like the kickoff here. I'm watching MSNBC. Screw you if you don't like that. I just happen to like the channel. I will switch over to the Republican thing if we don't get any company in here. Because that's going to be hilarious. Remember that guy that last year, that Chimichanga guy from Louisiana? Like, hilarious stuff. This is always so interesting, this sort of like Stanley Cup type of entry he has to make here. A lot of, you know, the old protocols. Here we go. Here's the kickoff. Still yapping. Kind of grizzled veterans here. We get set for the start of the State of the Union Address 2010. Hush should fall over the crowd any minute. Obama's lacing up his shoes. He's doing his foo-foo in the locker room. It really does have that kind of heavyweight fight kind of thing going on here.
Madam Speaker, the President of the United States.
Yeah! Now, why does it take two guys to do that? That's bizarre. Anyway, join me over here in the chat room. I'll be definitely interested in your comments on this. Obama's coming in like it's a campaign speech. Shaking hands, nodding, smiling. Running the room. Fascinating stuff.
Majority Leader Reid of the Senate. Exterior Stunning Hoyer.
Wow.
Leader of the House.
All the president's men. Here they come in. You're going to love the cutaway shot to Hillary tonight. That's going to be fascinating. You know, politics has become kind of like a sport. And like I said, there's the first shot of Michelle, clapping dutifully in her Antoness. There's another Anto in the room tonight. Michelle Obama. Has she been put in the corner? Oh, my God.
Does it have meaning? Does it have ceremonial meaning? Is this the sliver of monarchy that we...
There's definitely a different feeling. From a Bush... I'm going to mute these two morons. From a Bush State of the Union to Obama. Obama's coming in like something good happened, and he just didn't tell us that. Oh, they're kissing him. They're hugging him. George Bush came in like he was scolding the faculty, you know, especially those last couple of ones. Oh, was that Oprah? Who was the woman in the fish-type garb? She looks like a carp. I think it's Oprah. No, it can't possibly be Oprah. It'd be kind of funny if it was, though. Big poofy hair. Can't tell. Obama finally making his way to the stage. It shakes everybody's hand. He's so interesting. And patting on the back. And is that the Treasury dude? Is that Timothy Geithner? He's about to be fired. Shaking hands with Sotomayor. Crowd is going wild as we kick off our simulcast of the State of the Union. And again, the reason why we're doing this is because it is the ultimate Anto stage. This is the president in the ultimate third-person authority. He has to switch gears and become Anto here and become the decider, as number 43 was fond of saying he was. He was the decider, and I'm a professional bowler. So let's see if anybody... Has anyone bothered to call me? I don't know. Let's just take a look. Doubt it. Got to slide up here and see. No one, of course. Summertime, 9:10. Obama, get on the stage already. He's walking around. He's in the pit now. What the heck? This must be a nothing speech. He's hugging. This is like Bill Murray in Stripes. I wrote. I didn't know if you'd come. He really should be saying to all these senators in there is this.
You filthy criminals.
That's right. Maybe he'll get up there and he'll do one of these.
Huh? There's two things you need to know. Uh-huh. I'm the king. And number two is, look out, man!
That just made me really, that made me really laugh. Maybe he'll start out like this.
Have you ever transcended space and time?
Time, not space. No, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, maybe he'll do this.
King Kong ain't got shit on me!
All right, well, let's see what he does. He's finally at the lectern.
Starting slightly past.
Crowd going wild.
As all of Washington does, the
Hope you're tuning into this. If you're tuning into Blog Talk Radio, hear me talk about Obama. You are a wild man. I just want to mention that. Chat room's open, people. Just me in there.
Here's the President of the United States.
Here he is. See what's going on.
I have the high privilege and distinct honor of presenting to you the President of the United States.
Again, hooray! All right, here he goes. The chat room I'm referring to is the Blog Talk Radio chat room, not the Soma Space chat room. So, if you care. There he goes.
Speaker, Vice President Biden, members of Congress,
hey.
Distinguished guests.
Perfect timing tonight.
And fellow Americans.
Us too? Wow.
Our Constitution declares that from time to time, the President shall give to Congress information about the state of our union. For 220 years, our leaders have fulfilled this duty. They've done so during periods of prosperity and tranquility. And they've done so in the midst of war and depression, in moments of great strife and great struggle. It's tempting to look back on these moments and assume that our progress was inevitable, that America was always destined to succeed. But when the Union was turned back at Bull Run, and the Allies first landed at Omaha Beach, victory was very much in doubt. When the market crashed on Black Tuesday, and civil rights marchers were beaten on Bloody Sunday, the future was anything but certain. These were the times that tested the courage of our convictions and the strength of our union. And despite all our divisions and disagreements, our hesitations and our fears, America prevailed because we chose to move forward as one nation, as one people. Again, we are tested. And again, we must answer history's call.
Gracias.
1 year ago, I took office amid two wars, an economy rocked by a severe recession, a financial system on the verge of collapse, and a government deeply in debt. Experts from across the political spectrum warned that if we did not act, we might face a second depression. So we acted, immediately and aggressively. And 1 year later, the worst of the storm has passed. But the devastation remains. 1 in 10 Americans still cannot find work. Many businesses have shuttered. Home values have declined. Small towns and rural communities have been hit especially hard. And for those who'd already known poverty, life's become that much harder. And this recession has also compounded the burdens that America's families have been dealing with for decades. The burden of working harder and longer for less. Of being unable to save enough to retire, help kids with college. So I know the anxieties that are out there right now. They're not new. These struggles are the reason I ran for president.
Oofa.
These struggles are what I've witnessed for years in places like Elkhart, Indiana, Galesburg, Illinois. I hear about them in the letters that I read each night.
Read letters?
The toughest to read are those written by children.
Uh-huh.
Asking why they have to move from their home. Asking when their mom or dad will be able to go back to work.
For these Americans and so many others, change has not come fast enough. Some are frustrated. Some are angry. They don't understand why it seems like bad behavior on Wall Street is rewarded, but hard work on Main Street isn't. Or why Washington has been unable or unwilling to solve any of our problems. They're tired of the partisanship and the shouting and the pettiness. They know we can't afford it. Not now. So we face big and difficult challenges. And what the American people hope, what they deserve, is for all of us, Democrats and Republicans, to work through our differences, to overcome the numbing weight of our politics. For while the people who sent us here have different backgrounds, different stories, different beliefs, the anxieties they face are the same. The aspirations they hold are shared. A job that pays the bills, a chance to get ahead, most of all, the ability to give their children a better life. And you know what else they share? They share a stubborn resilience in the face of adversity. After one of the most difficult years in our history, they remain busy building cars and teaching kids, starting businesses and going back to school. They're coaching Little League and helping their neighbors.
Just finished up my snack here.
We are strained but hopeful.
Strained but hopeful.
Struggling but encouraged.
Starting to sound like an Alanis Morissette song.
This great
I'm strained, but I'm hopeful.
That I have never been more hopeful about America's future than I am tonight.
You're drunk. The man's drunk. Actually, the first standing ovation. Looks like the whole room got up, too. Putting on a good face for us here. And the crowd goes wild for the hopeful thing.
Despite our hardships, our union is strong. We do not give up. We do not quit. We do not allow fear or division to break our spirit.
Now, if you're watching this way, you're listening to me.
It's time the American
trying to Anto here, desperately. Little pointing, but he's touching his thumb. Point! Point like an Anto! He's making circles with his fingers.
Tonight,
you can tell he's trying to be mad,
like
though.
To talk about how together we can deliver on that promise. It begins with our economy. Our most urgent task upon taking office was to shore up the same banks that helped cause this crisis. It was not easy to do. And if there's one thing that has unified Democrats and Republicans, and everybody in between, is that we all hated the bank bailout. I hated it. You hated it. It was about as popular as a root canal. But when I ran for president, I promised I wouldn't just do what was popular. I would do what was necessary. And if we had allowed the meltdown of the financial system, unemployment might be double what it is today. More businesses.
First shot of the treasurer dude who's about to be fired.
More homes would have surely been lost. So I supported the last administration's efforts to create the financial rescue program.
He's almost pointing.
And when we took that program over, we made it more transparent and more accountable.
We get the left palm there.
The markets
oh, a little
are
point.
Stabilized, and we recovered most of the money we spent on the banks.
Just watch these hands. Now he's congratulating himself. That's got a smattering. Smirk out of Biden.
To recover the rest,
could be gas.
I
just here for this chair.
The biggest banks. Now,
a hearty clap from Biden.
And then he looks up.
Now, I know Wall Street isn't keen on this idea. But if these firms can afford to hand out big bonuses again, they can afford a modest fee to pay back the taxpayers who rescued them in their time of need. As we stabilized the financial system, we also took steps to get our economy growing again, save as many jobs as possible, and help Americans who become unemployed. That's why we extended or increased unemployment benefits for more than 18 million Americans, made health insurance 65% cheaper for families who get their coverage through COBRA, and passed 25 different tax cuts. Now, let me repeat. We cut taxes. We cut taxes for 95% of working families. We cut taxes for small businesses. We cut taxes for first-time home buyers. We cut taxes for parents trying to care for their children. We cut taxes.
This is looking like a campaign speech, ladies and gentlemen. Mm-hmm. Remember the whole cutting the taxes and the whole Joe the Plumber? Cashing in on the campaign promise. I don't believe you.
I thought I'd get some applause on that one.
Yeah. Where's the you lie? Oh, he pointed at the you lie guy.
As a result,
oh, he just called him out! Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, President Obama just called out the you lie guy. That was classic.
As a result, millions of Americans had more to spend on gas and food and other necessities, all of which helped businesses keep more workers. And we haven't raised income taxes by a single dime on a single person. Not a single dime. Because of the steps we took, there are about 2 million Americans working right now who would otherwise be unemployed.
Why are they clapping? Which two?
200,000 work in construction and clean energy. 300,000 are teachers and other education workers. Tens of thousands are cops, firefighters, correctional officers, first responders. And we're on track to add another 1.5 million jobs to this total by the end of the year. The plan that has made all of this possible, from the tax cuts to the jobs, is the Recovery Act. That's right. The Recovery Act, also known as the stimulus bill.
So wait a minute. He hated the bailout, but he loved the stimulus. It's the same damn thing.
Economists on the left and the right say this bill has helped save jobs and avert disaster. But you don't have to take their word for it. Talk to the small business in Phoenix that will triple its workforce because of the Recovery Act. Talk to the window manufacturer in Philadelphia who said he used to be skeptical about the Recovery Act until he had to add 2 more work shifts just because of the business it created. Talk to the single teacher raising 2 kids who was told by a principal in the last week of school that because of the Recovery Act, she wouldn't be laid off after all. There are stories like this all across America. And after 2 years of recession, the economy is growing again. Retirement funds have started to gain back some of their value. Businesses are beginning to invest again. And slowly starting to hire again.
Slowly slum.
But I realize that for every success story,
that doesn't point.
There are other stories. Of men and women who wake up with the anguish of not knowing where their next paycheck will come from.
Well, let me tell you the story of another loser.
And hear nothing in response.
Like the Anwild speech.
That is why jobs must be our number one focus in 2010. And that's why I'm calling for a new jobs bill tonight. true engine of job creation in this country will always be America's businesses.
I don't know why clapping. It's a small business. The Republicans stood up a little bit. I got a huzzah.
The government can create the conditions necessary for businesses to expand and hire more workers. We should start where most new jobs do, in small businesses. Companies that begin when an entrepreneur takes a chance on a dream, or a worker decides it's time she became her own boss. Through sheer grit and determination, these companies have weathered the recession and are ready to grow. But when you talk to small business owners in places like Allentown, Pennsylvania, or Elyria, Ohio, you find out that even though banks on Wall Street are lending again, they're mostly lending to bigger companies. Financing remains difficult for small business owners across the country, even those that are making a profit. So tonight,
Charlie Rangel, the no-tax-paying fool.
Billion dollars of the money Wall Street banks have repaid, and use it to help community banks give small businesses the credit they need to stay afloat.
Oh, the community bank lobby is standing up. That got about half the crowd. The ULI guy is sitting there nonplussed. John Boner. You lie!
I'm also proposing a new small business tax credit, one that will go to over 1 million small businesses who hire new workers or raise wages. While we're at it, let's also eliminate all capital gains taxes on small business investments and provide a tax incentive for all large businesses and all small businesses to invest in new plants and equipment.
And especially Somerspace in Larchmont. I want to give him more money.
Next, we can put Americans to work today, building the infrastructure of tomorrow. From the first railroads to the interstate highway system, our nation has always been built to compete. There's no reason Europe or China should have the fastest trains or the new factories that manufacture clean energy products. Tomorrow I'll visit Tampa, Florida, where workers will soon break ground on a new high-speed railroad funded by the Recovery Act. There are projects like that all across this country that will create jobs and help move our nation's goods, services, and information.
If we could take a random sample of the congruency of the clapping, not good.
We should put more Americans to work building clean energy facilities.
Clean energy.
And
I want my energy dirty.
And give rebates to Americans who
rebate.
Make their homes more energy
like
efficient.
Staples?
Which supports clean energy jobs. And to encourage these and other businesses to stay within our borders.
Gotta watch my switchboard to see if one of my
Toronto
guests decides to actually call in the Dopey Show.
And give those tax breaks to companies that create jobs right here.
And tax breaks business. About $5 worth so far. Tax breaks business. Growth. Recovery. Hooray. The house claps for itself. Oh, God. You pack of phonies.
As the first order of business this year, I urge the Senate to do the same, and I know they will.
And the Senate goes wild. Oh, the Democratic senators. I don't know if you lie, and he's on the House side. He didn't react this time. They got a camera on the guy.
You
lie!
They need our help. And I want a jobs bill on my desk without delay. But the truth is, these steps won't make up for the 7 million jobs that we've lost over the last 2 years. The only way to move to full employment is to lay a new foundation for long-term economic growth. and finally address the problems that America's families have confronted for years. We can't afford another so-called economic expansion like the one from the last decade, what some call the lost decade, where jobs grew more slowly than during any prior expansion, where the income of the average American household declined, while the cost of health care and tuition reached record highs, where prosperity was built on a housing bubble and financial speculation. From the day I took office, I've been told that addressing our larger challenges is too ambitious. Such an effort would be too contentious. I've been told that our political system is too gridlocked and that we should just put things on hold for a while. For those who make these claims, I have one simple question. How long should we wait? How long should America put its future on hold? You see, Washington has been telling us to wait for decades, even as the problems have grown worse. Meanwhile, China's not waiting to revamp its economy. Germany is not waiting. India is not waiting. These nations are, they're not standing still. These nations aren't playing for second place. They're putting more emphasis on math and science. They're rebuilding their infrastructure. They're making serious investments in clean energy because they want those jobs. Well, I do not accept second place for the United States of America.
I'm telling you, what is the difference?
I gotta find it on YouTube. That's it. I've gotta find it on YouTube. What is the difference between this and the Animal speech? I'm losing it.
As hard as it may be, as uncomfortable and contentious as the debates may become, it's time to get serious about fixing the problems that are hampering our growth. Now, one place to start is serious financial reform. Look, I'm not interested in punishing banks. I'm interested in protecting our economy. A strong, healthy financial market makes it possible for businesses to access credit and create new jobs. It channels the savings of families into investments that raise incomes. But that can only happen if we guard against the same recklessness that nearly brought down our entire economy. We need to make sure consumers and middle-class families have the information they need to make financial decisions.
I'm looking this thing up.
We can't allow financial institutions, including those that take your deposits, to take risks that threaten the whole economy. Now, the House has already passed financial reform with many of these changes. And the lobbyists are trying to kill it. But we cannot let them win this fight. And if the bill that ends up on my desk does not meet the test of real reform, I will send it back until we get it right. We've got to get it right.
All right, let's take a break from this and listen to a real speech. And tell me the difference there, audience, if you're listening along. Because this is absolutely just a bunch of hooey we're listening to here. Oh, man, what is the deal? Ugh, it is uncanny. Back to the speech.
Made the largest
YouTube has a heart attack.
Research funding in history. An investment that could lead to the world's cheapest solar cells, or treatment that kills cancer cells but leaves healthy ones.
Can't make it up.
Untouched. And no area is more ripe for such innovation than energy. You can see the results of last year's investments in clean energy. In the North Carolina company that will create 1,200 jobs nationwide helping to make advanced batteries. Or in the California business that will put 1,000 people to work making solar panels. But to create more of these clean energy jobs, we need more production, more efficiency, more incentives. And that means building a new generation of safe, clean nuclear power plants in this country.
Nuclear?
It means making tough decisions about opening new offshore areas for oil and gas development.
Drill, baby, drill.
It means continued investment in advanced biofuels and clean coal technologies.
Now it's a total commercial.
And yes, it means passing a comprehensive energy and climate bill with incentives that will finally...
Pelosi just leapt from her chair. The woman is insane with glee. It's also forced and hackneyed. Pack of phonies.
I'm grateful to the House for passing such a bill last year. And this year I'm eager to help advance the bipartisan effort in the Senate. I know there have been questions about whether we can afford such changes in a tough economy. I know that there are those who disagree with the overwhelming scientific evidence on climate change. But...
climate gate!
But here's the thing. Even if you doubt the evidence, providing incentives for energy efficiency and clean energy are the right thing to do for our future, because the nation that leads the clean energy economy will be the nation that leads the global economy, and America must be that nation.
There he is again. So even if the science is completely made up, this is the direction we're going. Wow. Where is Sacromaniac when I need him? Where is NSM Doc? Someone help me out here. Free trade.
Because the more products we make and sell to other countries, the more jobs we support right here in America. So tonight, we set a new goal. We will double our exports over the next 5 years, an increase that will support 2 million jobs in America.
Can we export Soma?
A national export initiative that will help farmers and small businesses increase their exports and reform export controls consistent with national security. We have to seek new markets aggressively, just as our competitors are.
All right, like I said, I want to take a little break from this garbage here and see if we can get a little levity. This will work. Because you tell me if this is the same.
Point of parliamentary procedure. Screw around. They're serious this time.
Take it easy. I'm in pre-law, man.
Thought you pre-med. What's the difference? Ladies and gentlemen, I'll be brief.
I think he's empty.
The issue here is not whether we broke a few rules or took a few liberties with our female party guests. We did. But you can't hold a whole fraternity responsible for the behavior of a few sick, perverted individuals. For if you do, then shouldn't we blame the whole fraternity system? And if the whole fraternity system is guilty, then isn't this an indictment of our educational institutions in general? I put it to you, Greg. Isn't this an indictment of our entire American society? Well, you can do what you want to us, but we're not going to sit here and listen to you badmouth the United States of America. Gentlemen!
You're not walking out on this one, mister. You're finished. No more Delta. You bought it this time, Buster. I'm calling your national office. I'm going to revoke your charter.
That's all this is. Oh, I just missed another one. Pelosi up like a Pez dispenser again. Oh, God, does it ever end?
And in this country, the success of our children cannot depend more on where they live than on their potential. When we renew the Elementary and Secondary Education Act, we will work with Congress to expand these reforms to all 50 states. Still, in this economy, a high school diploma no longer guarantees a good job. That's why I urge the Senate to follow the House and pass a bill that will revitalize our community colleges, which are a career pathway to the children of so many working families.
Oh, blonde in the blue dress. Can't identify her. That must be someone's wife. I think Tiger Woods' wife is in Mississippi.
To make college more affordable, this bill will finally end the unwarranted taxpayer subsidies that go to banks for student loans. Instead, let's take that money and give families a $10,000 tax credit for 4 years of college and increase Pell Grants. Another 1 million students that when they graduate, they will be required to pay only 10% of their income on student loans. And all of their debt will be forgiven after 20 years, and forgiven after 10 years if they choose a career in public service. Because in the United States,
holy
tit
fucks.
No one should go
to, I like that one.
Because they chose to go to college.
All your debt is forgiven after 20 years. Mama, I'm home.
And by the way, it's time for colleges and universities to get serious about cutting their own costs.
942 as he drops the F-bomb.
To help solve this problem.
646-478-4847. You got an opinion about this? Anybody out there? Is anybody there?
That's why last year I asked Vice President Biden to chair a task force on middle-class families. That's why we're nearly doubling the child care tax credit and making it easier to save for retirement by giving access to every worker, a retirement account, and expanding the tax credit for those who start a nest egg. That's why we're working to lift the value of a family's single largest investment, their home. The steps we took last year to shore up the housing market have allowed millions of Americans to take out new loans and save an average of $1,500 on mortgage payments. This year, we will step up refinancing so that homeowners can move into more affordable mortgages. And it is precisely to relieve the burden on middle-class families that we still need health insurance reform.
Now, that's the first time we actually pointed 43 minutes into this damn thing. He just entered the room, and they come in. They got up. Hello. Everybody up. A couple old guys in the back sitting down. Slowly getting up because they don't have health care, see?
Now, let's clear a few things up.
Uh-oh. So roll the sleeves now.
I didn't choose to tackle this issue to get some legislative victory under my belt. And by now, it should be fairly obvious that I didn't take on health care because it was good politics. I took on health care because of the stories I've heard from Americans with pre-existing conditions whose lives depend on getting coverage. Patients who've been denied coverage. Families, even those with insurance, who are just one illness away from financial ruin. After nearly a century of trying, Democratic administrations, Republican administrations, we are closer than ever to bringing more security to the lives of so many Americans. The approach we've taken would protect every American from the worst practices of the insurance industry. It would give small businesses and uninsured Americans a chance to choose an affordable health care plan in a competitive market. It would require every insurance plan to cover preventive care. And by the way, I want to acknowledge our First Lady, Michelle Obama, who this year is creating a national movement to tackle the epidemic of childhood obesity and make kids healthier. Thank you.
Oh, my God. The stone face, baby, maybe I told you I'd get into the speech. He gave him a little smile, like, all right now. That was a stone-faced Hillary Clinton pose.
Sit down.
Tell everyone to sit down.
She gets embarrassed. Our approach would preserve the rights of Americans who have insurance to keep their doctor and their plan. It would reduce costs and premiums for millions of families and businesses. And according to the Congressional Budget Office, the independent organization that both parties have cited as the official scorekeeper for Congress, our approach would bring down the deficit by as much as $1 trillion over the next 2 decades.
Time is this trillion, they're going wild. Trillion?
This is a complex issue.
Yeah.
And the longer it was debated, the more skeptical people became. I take my share of the blame for not explaining it more clearly to the American people.
That's love.
And I know that with all the lobbying and horse trading, the process left
me. I love that phrase, horse trading.
What's in it for me? But I also know this problem is not going away. By the time I'm finished speaking tonight, more Americans will have lost their health insurance. Millions will lose it this year. Our deficit will grow. Premiums will go up. Patients will be denied the care they need. Small business owners will continue to drop coverage altogether. I will not walk away from these Americans, and neither should the people in this chamber.
Well, it's a good thing it worked out that none of the guests decided to call in tonight. So, nobody here.
There's a reason why many doctors, nurses, and healthcare experts who know our system best consider this approach a vast improvement over the status quo. But if anyone from either party has...
And on really romantic evenings of self, I go salsa dancing with my confusion.
Mm-hmm.
Strengthen Medicare for seniors...
He's heading for the home stretch here.
Let me know.
Let me know.
Let me know.
Let me know.
Let me know. That's going to be the new phrase. Let me know. Harry Reid is smiling as if the gas he passed was pleasant.
Here's what I ask Congress, though. Don't walk away from reform. Not now. Not when we are so close. Let us find a way to come together and finish the job for the American people. Let's get it done.
Let's get it done. Let me know.
Now, even as health care reform would reduce our deficit, it's not enough to dig us out of the massive fiscal hole in which we find ourselves. It's a challenge that makes all others that much harder to solve. And one that's been...
I swear I'm going to get this some somatics before I sign off tonight. Just bear with me with this dopey speech for a couple moments.
The discussion of government spending by setting the record straight.
Da-da-doo-da-dum.
At the beginning of the last decade, the year 2000, America
the year
had a budget
2000.
Surplus of $200 billion. By the time I took office, we had a one-year deficit of over $1 trillion and projected deficits of $8 trillion over the next decade. Most of this was the result of not paying for two wars, two tax cuts, and an expensive prescription drug program. On top of that, the effects of the recession put a $3 trillion hole in our budget. All this was before I walked in the door.
Little slap at the old Bushster. Cut away to McCain, showing his left side.
Just state the facts. Now, if we had taken office in ordinary times, I would have liked nothing more than to start bringing down the deficit. But we took office amid a crisis, and our efforts to prevent a second depression have added another $1 trillion to our national debt. That, too, is a fact. I'm absolutely convinced that was the right thing to do. But families across the country are tightening their belts and making tough decisions. The federal government should do the same. So tonight, I'm proposing specific steps to pay for the $1 trillion that it took to rescue the economy last year. Starting in 2011, we are prepared to freeze government spending for 3 years. Spending related to our national security, Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security will not be affected. But all other discretionary government programs will. Like any cash-strapped family, we will work within a budget to invest in what we need and sacrifice what we don't. And if I have to enforce this discipline by veto, I will.
Second time he's pointed, 9:52. Yeah, not a very onto performance.
We will continue to go through the budget, line by line, page by page, to eliminate programs that we can't afford and don't work. We've already identified $20 billion in savings for next year. To help working families, we'll extend our middle-class tax cuts. But at a time of record deficits, we will not continue tax cuts for oil companies, for investment fund managers, and for those making over $250,000 a year. We just can't afford it. Now, even after paying for what we spent on my watch, we'll still face the massive deficit we had when I took office. More importantly, the cost of Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security will continue to skyrocket. That's why I've called for a bipartisan fiscal commission, modeled on a proposal by Republican Judd Gregg and Democrat Ken Conrad. This can't be one of those Washington gimmicks that lets us pretend we solve a problem. The commission will have to provide a specific set of solutions by a certain deadline. Yesterday, the Senate blocked a bill that would have created this commission. So I'll issue an executive order that will allow us to go forward because I refuse to pass this problem on to another generation of Americans. Tomorrow, the Senate should restore the pay-as-you-go law that was a big reason for why we had record surpluses in the 1990s.
Pay-as-you-go! Let me know! Michelle is shy!
Now, I know that some in my own party will argue that we can't address the deficit or freeze government spending when so many are still hurting. And I agree, which is why this freeze won't take effect until next year, when the economy is stronger. That's how budgeting works. But understand, Understand, if we don't take meaningful steps to rein in our debt, it could damage our markets, increase the cost of borrowing, and jeopardize our recovery, all of which would have an even worse effect on our job growth and family incomes. From some on the right, I expect we'll hear a different argument, that we just make fewer investments in our people, extend tax cuts, including those for the wealthier Americans, eliminate more regulations, maintain the status quo on health care, our deficits will go away. The problem is, that's what we did for 8 years.
Another dagger to George Bush's legacy as half the room stands. And that Oprah-looking woman is clapping.
That's what helped us into this crisis. It's what helped lead to these deficits. We can't do it again. Rather than fight the same tired battles that have dominated Washington for decades, it's time to try something new. Let's invest in our people without leaving them a mountain of debt. Let's meet our responsibility to the citizens who sent us here. Let's try common sense. A novel concept. Now, to do that, we have to recognize...
Third time he pointed, and he was ready for a little retort there.
We face a deficit of trust. Deep and corrosive doubts about how Washington works that have been growing for years. To close that credibility gap, we have to take action on both ends of Pennsylvania Avenue. To end the outsized influence of lobbyists. To do our work openly. To give our people the government they deserve. That's what I came to Washington to do. That's why, for the first time in history, my administration posts on our White House visitors online. That's why we've excluded lobbyists from policy-making jobs or seats on federal boards and commissions. But we can't stop there. It's time to require lobbyists to disclose each contact they make on behalf of a client with my administration or with Congress. It's time to put strict limits on the contributions that lobbyists give to candidates for federal office. With all due deference to separation of powers, last week the Supreme Court reversed a century of law that I believe will open the floodgates for special interests, including foreign corporations, to spend without limit in our elections. American elections should be bankrolled by America's most powerful interests, or worse, by foreign entities. They should be decided by the American people. And I'd urge Democrats and Republicans to pass a bill that helps correct some of these problems. I'm also calling on Congress to continue down the path of earmark reform. Democrats and Republicans. You've trimmed some of this spending. You've embraced some meaningful change. But restoring the public trust demands more. For example, some members of Congress post some earmark requests online. Tonight, I'm calling on Congress to publish all earmark requests on a single website before there's a vote so that the American people can see how their money is being spent.
A transparency through digitalia. Into the digitalia.
Of course, none of these reforms will even happen if we don't also reform how we work with one another. Now, I'm not naive. I never thought that the mere fact of my election would usher in peace and harmony and some post-partisan era. I knew that both parties that fed divisions that are deeply entrenched. And on some issues, there are simply philosophical differences that will always cause us to part ways. These disagreements about the role of government in our lives, about our national priorities and our national security, they've been taking place for over 200 years. They're the very essence of our democracy. But what frustrates the American people is a Washington where every day is election day. We can't wage a perpetual campaign where the only goal is to see who can get the most embarrassing headlines about the other side. A belief that if you lose, I win. Neither party should delay or obstruct every single bill just because they can. The confirmation of... I'm speaking to both parties now. The confirmation of well-qualified public servants shouldn't be held hostage to the pet projects or grudges of a few individual senators. Washington may think that saying anything about the other side, no matter how false, no matter how malicious, is just part of the game. But it's precisely such politics that has stopped either party from helping the American people. Worse yet, it's sowing further division among our citizens, further distrust in our government. So no, I will not give up on trying to change the tone of our politics. I know it's an election year, and after last week, it's clear that campaign fever has come even earlier than usual. But we still need to govern. The Democrats, I would remind you that we still have the largest majority in decades, and the people expect us to solve problems, not run for the hills. And if the Republican leadership is going to insist that 60 votes in the Senate are required to do any business at all in this town, a supermajority, then the responsibility to govern is now yours as well. Just saying no to everything may be good short-term politics, but it's not leadership. We were sent here to serve our citizens, not our ambitions. So let's show the American people that we can do it together. This week I'll be addressing a meeting of the House Republicans. I'd like to begin monthly meetings with both Democratic and Republican leadership. I know you can't wait. Now, throughout our history, no issue has united this country more than our security. Sadly, some of the unity we felt after 9/11 has dissipated. Now, we can argue all we want about who's to blame for this, but I'm not interested in relitigating the past. I know that all of us love this country. All of us are committed to its defense. So let's put aside the schoolyard taunts about who's tough. Let's reject the false choice between protecting our people and upholding our values. Let's leave behind the fear and division and do what it takes to defend our nation and forge a more hopeful future for America and for the world. We began last year. Since the day I took office, we've renewed our focus on the terrorists who threaten our nation. We've made substantial investments in our homeland security and disrupted plots that threaten to take American lives. We are filling unacceptable gaps revealed by the failed Christmas attack with better airline security and swifter action on our intelligence. We've prohibited torture and strengthen partnerships from the Pacific to South Asia to the Arabian Peninsula. And in the last year, hundreds of al-Qaeda's fighters and affiliates, including many senior leaders, have been captured or killed, far more than in 2008. And in Afghanistan, we're increasing our troops and training Afghan security forces so they can begin to take the lead in July of 2011 and our troops can begin to come home.
He's covered all his bases here. 10:05 as we await for our final guest to not show.
We will reward good
in one of the probably the most depressing summer times I've done in a while,
the
since the Haiti earthquake. There you
men
go.
Men and women alike. We're joined by allies and partners who have increased their own commitments and will come together tomorrow in London to reaffirm our common purpose. There will be difficult days ahead, but I am absolutely confident we will succeed. As we take the fight to al-Qaeda, we are responsibly leaving Iraq to its people. As a candidate, I promised that I would end this war, and that is what I'm doing as president. We will have all of our combat troops out of Iraq by the end of this August. We will support the Iraqi government. We will support the Iraqi government as they hold elections, and we will continue to partner with the Iraqi people to promote regional peace and prosperity. But make no mistake, this war is ending, and all of our troops are coming home.
Hey, kind of karate chopped it. Ooh, there's a shot of a general not happy about that. Look like the guy from Avatar, actually. Well, hopefully he's winding this sucker down here.
Tonight, all of our men and women in uniform in Iraq,
you join me in the chat room.
Nothing.
What a horrible night.
And around the world, they have to know that that they have our respect, our gratitude, our full support. And just as they must have the resources they need in war, we all have a responsibility to support them when they come home. That's why we made the largest increase in investment for veterans in decades. That's why we're building a 21st century VA. And that's why Michelle has joined with Joe Biden to forge a national commitment to support military families.
I'm pretty amazed.
Even as we prosecute two wars, we're still confronting perhaps the greatest danger to the American people, the threat of nuclear weapons. I've embraced the vision of John F. Kennedy and Ronald Reagan through a strategy that reverses the spread of these weapons and seeks a world without them. To reduce our stockpiles and launches while ensuring our deterrent, the United States and Russia are completing negotiations on the farthest reachings arms control treaty in nearly two decades.
All right, I'm officially bored out of my mind with this. I'm muting it because I'd like to get to something I like to talk about instead of this garbage that we had to be subjected to tonight. Another hot air speech from another figurehead president. What to say? I don't feel too good about it. Just waxed his shoelaces. Oh, boy. Something so sedate about that. I wanted to direct your attention over to somaspace.org, and here's a little priceless pep talk from our feature Soma tonight, Peyton Manning, in case you hadn't noticed. We've been talking about Obama for an hour, but listen to this, and then we'll talk a little Soma here and wrap it up real quick to get this mistake off the airwaves.
priceless pep talk from Peyton Manning.
Bummed about that gut. Wish you had rock hard abs. Look, I'm going to be honest. Unless you're under the age of 23 or a professional football player, it's probably not going to happen. If I were you, I'd just buy some bigger shirts.
And this has been another priceless pep talk from Peyton Manning. Go to priceless.com for a personalized pep talk you can send to a friend.
Hey, it's one of many pep talks from Peyton Manning on the MasterCard commercial series there. Hilarious stuff to me. Because if you know Peyton, you watch him, you see him. He's got a personality to him that doesn't project onto unless you're right in his wheelhouse. Like his teammates talk about it, you know, all the other things he does. What makes him so marketable is that he has good secondary domains. He's not one of those sharp ontos that just bludgeon you. Now we're going to see this play out next week when Media Day hits at the Super Bowl, and we're talking to Drew Brees, the Saints quarterback, as opposed to Peyton Manning, is that Brees and the coach, is another one, Sean Payton, another onto, they don't have very many secondary signatures, so they're constantly pointing, they're constantly talking downhill at you. Everything is a command, everything is sort of like a, you know, an order or so. He's talking to you there, and it's very aw shucks, and it doesn't, even though he's sort of talking down to you, he's not... you know, he's not going out of his way to put you down. And that's the difference. When you see Derek Jeter in a commercial, he's almost so flat and aloof and so disconnected from you, he kind of wafts in as an exo hiding in that onto armor, you know. So it's like he doesn't connect with you at all. He's Derek Jeter. And you should just know that that's royalty over there. And you don't really get any sense of contact with him, you know. So three different ontos, just to give you an example there. Of how that, and then if you go to basketball with Kobe, they had to make a puppet out of him to make him seem approachable. So it's like the ontos are constantly getting attention because they have that archetypal quality of authority. And when you want to market a product, you want someone who's going to endorse it. You want someone who's going to command you to go buy that thing. Tony Tiger, you know, he's ego, but you know, you get the idea what I'm saying. And that's what you want to. You start watching when you look at the way people pick their spokesperson. I mean, look at all the fallout from Tiger Woods. It was mostly, do we want this person next to our product? Now, he's an exo. So his whole deal was his endorsements because he was able to do it because he was so unique and so separate and so unapproachable, so steeled off from the rest of the culture that when he fell to earth and you know all of his picadillos were out in the news, he all of a sudden wasn't so separate anymore. So it is sort of a, you know, it's a very formulaic model of the way we build up the person and then tear them down. But when it comes to ontos here, they're sort of impervious to it. They don't really like, you know, Alexander Ovechkin. He's a foreign guy. He's kind of a punk. He, you know, he broke some guy's jaw the other night with a slap shot. Didn't get any points, but he fights. He's not a kempt guy. So he's got that pure, like very... you know, sort of inner fury going on that makes him play at unbelievable levels in the playoffs. You know, the last year was a perfect example, steamed by my Rangers. And the thing is that he's the perfect villain. Reggie Miller, you know, from Indiana Pacers, classic, you know, villain in the 90s against the Knicks. Even Michael Jordan, ultimate onto, didn't mind playing the villain role. And that's the difference. Ontos that are ontos apart from their social role, when they do this on a biological level, they don't have any problem being the bad guy. They don't have any problem being perceived as being the heavy because that's what they perceive themselves to be. And that's the difference. Let's see if Broxy dared to call me here. No, of course not. Well, I'm kind of disappointed. But anyway, if you go over to somaspace.org and you click on the link there for... the four domains. I'm going to do that as we talk. Get back over here and we play the. Got a brand new web banner, by the way. Could change any minute, so be over and check it. Check it out before I change it again. So it's first day in SomaSpace. Meet the four domains right there on the homepage. And on the Onto side, we've done this for the other three domains. I'm going to do this for the Ontos. All right. Now, the narrative for the Onto is that A game. you know, I'm all about my ideas, and my creativity happens in the moment that I decide it. I can accurately advise others. This is Peyton Manningism. I feel profound frustration when that's not welcomed. Don't piss them off. I'm a team leader. I thrive in group settings. These are all qualities of Ananto. More than anything, I want to leave an unforgettable legacy. That's important. When you start thinking about a guy like Brett Favre, who's a philo, has the same temporal orientation as Ananto, but not quite all about him. It's all about his performance. Where they could distinguish the two, where someone like Roger Clemens is willing to basically go to jail over his legacy. All different animals, okay? So between Brett Favre and Brett Favre, what's his name? I think I'm getting a call. Hang on a second. All right, and I think I'm back in the room. Let's double check. Yeah, it looks like I'm still here. And that was John Murray calling in, one of the Antos we wanted to have on to talk about. We can get more next week, talk about the Super Bowl live from Miami, get a little Flavor Flav. But that's the essence of Anto right there. He called me back at 10:17. That's perfect. That's just absolutely just, it's exquisite. So let's see, do I have anything more to say? Oh, my God. There's another Anto calling me now, but I'm not going to answer the phone. I'm on the air. Anyway, when you're mirroring with them, when you make eye contact with them, you'll notice it because their two eyes are going right through you. The attention is coming right at you. It's like high beams in your face. Can't mistake that. Very unique. That's why they're only 12% of the population. The other part of it is the attending part. The energy also travels. So from eyes and heart, you're getting this like hairdryer feeling of being in the crosshairs. Now, if you agree with them, you'll feel a certain buoyiness and a resiness. When you feel opposed to them, my God, it's like steak knives. And on the observational level, you know, you're looking at a tiger stalking its prey, and that's the feeling you get. You know, so all these things, all these characteristics of them are very apparent. As you look, you watch a Peyton Manning commercial in the next couple of weeks, you see him on SportsCenter, look for the fast, direct greeting he makes, like little nods to acknowledge a question. Very strong, definitive body language. His posture is always very firm. He listens intently. His voice tones are dominant. Everything is sharp, right? He's visually oriented his word choices. He'll say, you know, it's a foggy situation. It's an unpaved road. You get a very clear picture from the words he chooses, right? He's very political. So you'll see him not, you know, undermine the coach. You know, he won't take on the exo structure, but he'll maintain his authority within himself. Very close attention to continuity. Everything goes from the past to the future, so it's all connected. He will alter the status quo. That's his job. His job is to overcome obstacles. He's your man. I'm your man. And that pointing gesture, like we don't see Obama still not doing, he's still making that little circle, is so just so omnipresent. The pointing, constant with the pointing. They always point wherever they're trying to do. Pay attention, because where they're pointing is where they're going to place things in time. So if they point to your right, that's your future. They point to your left, that's your past. Make sure their words match that, because they could be talking about things in terms of their past and their future, which is the opposite of you. You know, so just paying attention if they use their left hand as opposed to their right hand to point, so you really got to figure out, to know where they're directing you to get the good information. So you can get a lot of creativity and a lot of co-creativity from Ananto if you pay attention to those things. And that's really what I wanted you to learn from watching Peyton's commercials. And when you see Kobe's puppets, and when you see, a Jeter commercial come on, they mentioned him actually today in respect to
what's going on with Tiger Woods. How come Jeter's not in therapy? Well, there's a little different animal there. Little different animal there. So unless we have a stunning upset here and one of our other two guests calls in, we're going to shut it down tonight. I'm absolutely bored out of my mind. So I'm going to say goodbye early, and we'll get on next week with our pre-Super Bowl show. It'll be an eco week on all levels. So we'll be talking Super Bowl. Let's see. I think he's finishing up here. There he goes. Yeah, there's the crowd noise. I'm going to leave that go. Let's see if I can find a song to just kind of ease us out here tonight. As we take it down here on Summertime. Very sedate and very mellow show in a way. As Obama shakes hands on his way out, waving. He's walking, he's waving. And Michelle's clapping. He's happy with the performance. Elvis is leaving the stage there to his left. So, next week we're going to get on here. We're going to go back through the cycle again. We're going to take another look at the eco in its perturbed state. See how that plays into our February somatic calendar as we get past the groundhog there on Tuesday. And we'll see you February 3rd, Wednesday night, 9 o'clock sharp. Maybe John Murray joining us, talk a little Super Bowl, a little physiology, get into emotions, how they affect performance. We get them in there, and we'll go from there. That's the way it is, baby. That's the way it is. Yes, yes, yes. So enjoy your full moon fever this Saturday night. If you haven't already, go subscribe to my weekly Woo Letter of Vital Interest at somaspace.org. And please read about the four domains and the simples and all the other things I do over there. I work really hard. I'd like you to be able to share with somebody else. Until then, my friends, this is Dr. Mark saying, thank you for this time in your space. Be yourself and be well.
Travel light through the darkness.
Where's that? I got two turntables and a microphone. Where's that? I got two turntables and a microphone. Where's that? I got two turntables and a microphone. Where's that?
Spiral on, Sapiens.